Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This is Meta, a podcast about podcasts. Today's guest is Amantha Imber, who is the host of the number one productivity podcast in the store at the moment, How I Work. I'm a total hot mess when it comes to how I work and how I plan my day because of the lockdown, because I'm starting a new job, because I'm starting a new job where I'm my own boss. And so I thought this was a great opportunity to really chat to Amantha about some of her best techniques in getting things done. And this is the first of a crossover episode, actually. I'll be on Amantha's show coming up, where I do explain some of the techniques I use now to get through my day. So if you are interested in that, then you can head on over to How I Work and check out some of my tips and tricks. But for now, we're going to hear from the expert herself, not from some idiot who doesn't know what he's talking about. Let's talk about your show. I would imagine I find I am completely struggling myself and have been more this year in kind of getting things done and staying on top of where I'm supposed to be and also kind of work-life balance. Do you think that this is one of the reasons why your show is kind of taking off as it is?
Yeah, I think it's definitely, I mean, it's grown since its inception. So it's been running now for nearly 2.5 years. And I think that definitely with the shift to working from home, people have been thrown into this environment where they've had to reset their habits and their routines and the way they approach their work. So I know that the podcast has definitely grown because of that, but I feel like it's been like steady growth from when I launched a couple of years ago.
No, that makes total sense to me because so often when I'm doing these interviews, it gets pitched, the shows I'm talking about get pitched to me as like this overnight success. And then I look back and there's a good 3 or 4 years of groundwork that has gone into that overnight success.
Sorry, not an overnight success. I wish.
So tell me about the journey then. So okay, you started a couple of years ago. What were the first couple of episodes like? Do you cringe if you listen to them now or?
Oh, it's been so long since I've listened to them. But you know what? I don't think I would cringe simply because the very first interview I did is still one of my favorites. So in terms of your question around, well, how did it come about? So I'd been wanting to start a podcast for years. I'd been talking about starting a podcast for years. And it probably took years for me to firstly go, okay, I just need to do it. And secondly, yeah, this is a topic that I could get really excited about for a long, long time. So that kind of all came together. And the other thing that proved really good in terms of timing is that I was attending my first TED conference in Vancouver. So TED proper, if you like. Mm-hmm. And that proved to be a really great way to secure some initial guests that were, I guess, quite high profile and probably guests that I couldn't have got straight off the bat had it not been for the fact that I was able to meet them in person and have a chat to them about the podcast. So the very first interview I did was with one of my academic heroes, Adam Grant, who is an organizational psychologist and the host of Work Life and a professor at Wharton. And so when I look back at my early interviews, gosh, it's kind of dependent on the guests as to whether I cringe or not, because I love having Adam on the show. And
I'm not saying you should. I was just wondering.
No, I cringe
at episodes I recorded 3 weeks ago.
Oh, gosh. I think, you know, when you're just listening back to your voice every week, several times a week, you just become desensitized. So the kind of the cringeworthy factor is, I think I'm just desensitized to it is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't think I'm there yet, but that's why I'm doing a daily show to really get it out of my system quickly. So I can see Adam Grant was one of your first guests. Can you remember any of his advice?
A few that have stuck with me. One is the power of batching meetings. So doing meetings back to back. So this is something that Adam does in his own life. And there were some interesting research that showed that if you've got a meeting coming up in your diary, like in the next hour or two, you'll actually be 22% less productive. Hmm. And I heard that and I'm like, that totally makes sense because there's not enough time to get into flow. You're kind of, you know, fluffing around doing little bits and pieces, making sure that you don't miss the start time of the next meeting. And so definitely batching meetings was something that I have tried to do since then. Something else I got, and I think this was from my interview with Adam, although I've heard it a handful of times now, is to finish the day on a downhill slope. So this is where you finish basically mid-task. So let's just say, you know, we both do writing with, you know, some of the various hats that we both wear. And so rather than, say, finishing a draft of an article, you would actually finish mid-sentence or mid-paragraph, which means that when you start work the next day, it's a lot easier to just get into the swing of things and not procrastinate because you've got an easy start because essentially you've parked on a downhill slope. So there are a couple of things that have stuck with me.
That's really, really fascinating. I especially like the batch meeting idea because, yeah, I absolutely find that in myself. Like, yeah, I can spend an entire day pondering the question I'm about to ask someone like you, whereas so sometimes I wish I could just, you know, wake just before the episode is ready to be recorded.
Yeah, if only.
But what are some of those? I mean, the term life hack is so overused. But what are some of those other kind of tips that have stayed with you from some of your guests?
Sure. So I got some really interesting ones from this guy called Brian Scudamore, who's the co-founder and CEO of 1-800 Got Junk, amongst other companies. So it's about like a $500 million set of companies that he runs. And something that he does is very much about if he's on holiday or if he's on a break from work and he's not going to like dip into his email or social media or anything like that. And to actually do that, as opposed to being sucked in, because we all know how easy it is to be sucked in by those technologies and digital distractions, he gets his assistant to change his password for his email and social media accounts. So he literally cannot get in. He can't even break in. And
I love that.
That stuck with me. I personally love that. Something else that, I mean, so many things stick with me. Someone that I was so excited to interview was Cal Newport, who is a computer science professor at Georgetown and also the author of several best-selling books, including Deep Work, which has had a profound impact on how I work. And Cal talked about how he would he has different types of deep work that he does. So, for example, there's writing work, there's solving computer science problems kind of work, as a couple of examples. And he'll have different physical environments that he will associate with that deep work. So, for example, he, in his home study, he got this desk custom made that's designed to look like the desks that he had when he was a student at university. And that's where he does his writing deep work. Whereas if he's trying to work through, let's say, a computer science problem or theorem, I don't know if I've used the right language there, he will walk. So he'll go for a walk sort of around his campus or between his home and his campus. And I thought that's really interesting, thinking about the different categories of deep focused work that you have to do and then linking that to a particular physical environment. And that makes sense psychologically, because you get into that flow state more quickly because your associations are linked to that physical environment and that kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that when this whole pandemic 2020 thing happened, my desk was about 5 centimeters from the end of my bed, and it was, funnily enough, not the most productive work environment that I could have. I've been able to thankfully move things around now, and now I've got a kind of dedicated spot just for the desk, and I really try to make a point of, when I finally get to the end of the day, of getting up from the desk and not touching it again, because I have far too many distractions. I'm on Twitter and Slack and everything else all the time. And so I find that like the only way I can ever relax is if I stand up and put that the giant computer away and walk over to the couch and it's funny how these little so much of your environment will play into the way you behave. This is terrible. I'm sitting here talking to you about productivity and an app is yelling at me in the background and I have to find out which one so I can silence it. That is such the world we live in now. Like what is your approach, say, to notifications on your phone? Do you have any notifications on the phone?
Rarely. How I control the notifications is I use do not disturb mode. So sometimes I find after work notifications can be useful, or when I'm doing shallow work, let's say, so work that is non-cognitively demanding, I don't mind being interrupted by the phone ringing or a text message coming through. So more what I will do, and I mostly tend to control it from my Apple Watch actually, is just using do not disturb mode. So yeah. I find that is simplest as opposed to manually going through and turning off notifications for everything. So there might be three or four apps that I do have notifications switched on from, but I kind of like having a master control, which is what I think about do not disturb mode on my Apple Watch as being. So typically I'm in do not disturb mode until I've done a couple of deep work sprints. So that might be two lots of 60 to 90 minute sprints in the morning, kind of like really knocking over the most important stuff that I need to get done that day. And then I go a little bit easier on myself and I let notifications come in if I'm doing something where I won't interrupt like a flow state if I'm being interrupted.
Did you find the Apple Watch was one of those moments though where you suddenly needed to decide what was allowed to beep? I found for me, especially like there's one thing about a phone kind of beeping in your pocket that you can ignore, but when your wrist is actually lighting up, that really shows just how many applications out there are begging for our attention at any time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm very strict on what I let into the Apple Watch because otherwise I find it just drives me nuts. And I've had an Apple Watch for so long. Like I don't even remember what it's like to just have your phone and, you know, either have that on silence or ringing as the way that you control what interrupts you, because I've had the watch for so long. And like probably the things that I use most frequently on the watch, aside from obviously telling the time, is that I use the pedometer to see how many steps I've done. So I mainly use it as a fitness app, and I also use the timer. And I actually use the timer function. And I know that I could use the timer function on the iPhone, but I guess turned it into a bit of a habit where if I've got a task to do and I know that I could get lost in the task, but I also know that I've got something coming up in, let's say, 30 minutes or 60 minutes, quite often I'll set the timer just so I don't lose myself and then be late for the thing that I've got coming up. So I find that quite a useful hack that that I think the watch is really handy for.
What about one of the issues I have found when I've chatted to friends, we're all in this moment of trying to figure out how to get things done in this brand new environment at home. And a bunch of my friends have made the joke that they spend so much time looking and evaluating productivity apps that they just don't have time to get things done. So are there one or two apps out there that you just absolutely love to death that you could recommend?
100% there are. And yes, I have fallen down that trap myself. But luckily, guests on the show, I've got no shortage of software app recommendations. So look, my go-to ones for email, in terms of email client, I love Superhuman. I imagine that might be one that you've come across. There's a huge waiting list, but it's great.
Talk me through it, because I saw the waiting list, and then I saw a couple of stories about it being a little bit, I don't know, it felt like a bit of a privacy intrusion to the people who were emailing you. And so I never kind of followed up on that. So why do you love Superhuman?
I love Superhuman. They say that it's the fastest email experience. And It is. It's super fast. I think once you know your way around all the shortcuts, I find that I can be really quick with email, and it's got all the functionality, like reminding me if someone hasn't replied, letting me know if someone's actually received the email, obviously like having canned responses and things like that. And just the interface is really clean. So I've never been a fan of Gmail because there's just too much going on, even with the different views and settings that you can do. But I used to be crazy about Newton until they closed down, but then they reopened. And I found that Superhuman is a really similar user interface to Newton. Sorry if I'm just like getting too geeky and I've just like lost a billion listeners there.
But anyway, it's sad that I know every single one of these apps.
And now what, and I also like Superhuman because I can just close it down. It's not in my browser. Obviously I can close down Gmail, but I just like the idea of closing down software completely to be out of email. So I do love Superhuman. I recently came across another email client called Tempo, which actually helps you batch email. So the default setting on Tempo, I haven't used it yet because I am quite a Superhuman nut. But the default setting is that it lets you check email twice a day and that's it, which I think is a really brave move because email programs are trying to get you using it as often as possible. I mean, that's part of the model. So I'm keen to experiment with Tempo, maybe if I can remove myself from Superhuman. So that's Superhuman. For calendar.
Actually, again, I'll stop you there because I find that really fascinating. I've got a mate of mine who only checks email, I think two times a day or one time a day. And, you know, look, he's worth a lot more than I am. And I think that, you know, that's a status thing. You only get to very good rules about email when you're kind of the boss. Like no one else gets away with that kind of crap.
I don't know. I beg to differ. Certainly at Inventium, if you email someone on the team, chances are there's probably a 50% chance that if you email them in the morning, because we all test our chronotype, so most of us are larkish or do our best work in the morning, and therefore it means that most of us, if we're not delivering work to a client or running a workshop or a keynote or something like that, we're probably in deep work mode. And so therefore we've probably got an out-of-office autoresponder on that says, "Don't expect an email from me because doing deep work." Yes. So that's our team. And it's something that we put in, well, we recommend that clients do it in the training programs that we run. And I think a lot of them do take our advice. So I don't know. I reckon it's possible. Even if you're not the boss, you can still batch emails. I mean, you know, people have this false sense of idea of what constitutes urgent or what an emergency is. Like if someone is not going to die, I don't think it's an emergency.
Yep.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
And what about Slack? I mean, because do you use Slack in your office?
No, we've tried Slack. We don't use Slack. I know that some people in the team will use just the Google chat function because everyone else uses Gmail. I think I'm the only one that uses Superhuman. So we tried Slack. We didn't find that it really added much to the way that we work. Something I heard interestingly, I had a guest on the show from GitLab whose name was Darren Murph, and he's the head of remote at GitLab. It was one of my favorite interviews from this year. And he talked about that at GitLab, they use Slack, but it's only for social chit chat. So it's almost the water cooler of GitLab because they're a remote first company. And I thought that's really interesting, just having Slack for social interactions. So interestingly, we have a WhatsApp group at Inventium. So we're all on this WhatsApp group, which I guess is kind of like a Slack without channels. And that's where we post our water cooler chit chat, particularly now that we've been working remote since March. So we couldn't get Slack to stick at Inventium.
Yeah, it just feels like, you know, it's one of those funny things of like we can all see that email is broken and we all get too much email and it's too hard to get through the day. And I just love that Silicon Valley's response to that was, let's make something that's always on and always yelling at you, and people will just naturally assume that you're always in front of it and will always respond.
100%. And I just remembered it would be remiss of me not to mention Hey.com in terms of email, because for my personal email, I have now switched over to Hey.com, and I was quite excited to get the email account, Amantha at Hey.com, and feel free to email me there, although I might block you. So Hey.com, I love it. It's from the creators of Basecamp, and those guys are just amazing. I'm sure you're a fan as well. And it rethinks the workflow of email, which I'm really loving. And for the first time ever, my personal email inbox is so clean.
Oh, that sounds like a dream. I'm going to have to try all of these again, but I'm just so worried about investing so much time into these apps that are supposed to make me more productive. Like, I feel like maybe it's just worth trying to be productive with the stuff I already know.
Yeah. And look, I think that there's something to that, because if I've got a tech entrepreneur on the show, I'll always ask for software and hardware recommendations. And every now and then I'll come across someone who's like, I just don't invest time in that. You know, I just do the basics, which I find quite refreshing. But I think you just need to find good go-to people who you trust, so that you're not demoing countless pieces of software and hardware, but just kind of find your trusted people and just go, okay, if they think it's good, I reckon I'll invest the time in changing my workflow or changing my habits around this. I don't have heaps of software that I recommend, but the software that I use, I love and I double down on, and my workflow changes positively as a result.
Fantastic. Well, you have, so we've covered email quite deeply now. Can you just give me your favorite to-do list app and your favorite calendar, or the favorite way to work a calendar?
Yeah. So my favorite calendar software is Woven. And I, funnily enough, I got the Superhuman and the Woven recommendations from Tim Kendall, who was on my show, How I Work, I want to say a year and a half ago, something like that. And interestingly, he's in the social dilemma. So he used to be the president of Pinterest, and then he's now CEO of Moment, which is an app that helps you have healthier phone habits. And Woven uses artificial intelligence to help make scheduling easier. And I think the feature that I like best in Woven is that you can have templates for events that you're commonly scheduling. So for example, podcast interviews is something that I would commonly schedule, and there are certain things that need to be in the invite. And so I've got a template for that, and it just makes it a whole lot easier to schedule guests rather than fiddling around with things. And sure, I could use Calendly or something like that. And there are a few other meetings like that, you know, where there, you know, might be six or seven people that attend that are outside of Inventium. So I don't have a group that I could send that to, if you like. And yeah, just I really like that particular feature of Woven. So I do like that. In terms of to-do list software, I was a Wunderlist fan until that got bought. And so now I use Things because I'm a Mac user, and I like the different levels of kind of projects, tasks and subtasks and checklists. I feel like it's just it works for me in terms of how I think about these things. And I also use it to store lists as well as being a to-do list software. So for example, you know, books that I want to read, rather than having, say, a page in Evernote, I would have a list in Things that's books to read or TV shows to check out or podcasts to check out. So I'll have my to-do list for deep and shallow work tasks and a few kind of project lists. And then I'll have lists of things that I'm going to do one day.
Yeah, I found that's the only way I kind of get things done these days, is the second a thought pops into my head, I have to put it in whatever to-do list app I'm using, or I know that, like, 3 weeks from now, I'll remember that, you know, it'll pop back into my head of like, oh, that's what you were supposed to have done. And it just really feels like this is one of the biggest struggles that we all have these days of trying to capture the tasks that you need to do so that you can find the time to actually plan for them.
Definitely. I just think you just need to remove stuff from your head wherever possible. Not yours personally, but just people in general need to get stuff out of their head and onto paper or digital paper.
And so you're working from home. How have you found, what are some things you've done to enable that kind of clean break at the end of the day to really separate work and life?
I would say I have not done that successfully. Yep. I do have a clean start to the day, so I've got a pretty good morning rhythm, which varies a little bit depending on whether my daughter's with me. So I've got my 6.5-year-old daughter Frankie with me half the time, so mornings are quite different when she's with me versus not. But typically mornings start with exercise of some kind. And then when I don't have Frankie, I will pretty soon get into work sort of fairly early. If I've got Frankie, then there's school-related routines that go with that. But at the end of the day, look, there are things that I've tried that if I stuck to them religiously, they would be really good. So something that we teach a lot of our clients, and I know some of the team still do this at Inventium, is we have we call it like a shutting down your day ritual, where an ideal way to finish the workday, and this is based on research that we've done where it significantly increases productivity and well-being, is you simply write two sentences. So the first sentence is, today I made progress on ... And you think about, like, you essentially reflect on what are the things where you made meaningful progress. And why this is effective is, firstly, we often don't stop and reflect, but we also know from research from Harvard professor Teresa Amabile is that making progress on things that matter is the single biggest contributor to us feeling engaged and motivated at work. So it stands to reason that if every day we can think about what did I make meaningful progress on, we're going to feel a whole lot more excited about our work. Then the second thing that we recommend people do, and that when I'm having a good day, I will do this, is I will finish the sentence, tomorrow will be a great day if I do, you know, X, Y, or Z. So typically what I will always do is I will time box my day the day before. So I'll have a plan for the following day. And by time boxing, I mean essentially making meetings with myself around what are the key tasks or projects that I want to work on and what do I want to accomplish, and approximately how long do I think that will take me. So I've got a clear idea of what's coming the next day, the evening before. I will sometimes not switch off very well. And look, one of the things that I feel makes it a little bit murky is, well, a couple of things. Firstly, I love my work, and so work doesn't feel like work. So for example, if I'm editing a podcast episode at 7 o'clock at night, many would argue that is work. For me, that's really interesting. So I'm just as happy doing that as I am reading a book or binge watching something on Netflix. And likewise, the other thing that's further complicated things, if I talk about switching off and having boundaries, is that I recently launched a second podcast called How to Date. And that's a show where myself and my closest girlfriend talk about, we talk to different experts about how to get better at dating when you didn't think you'd be dating again, having been out of my marriage for about a year. And that was created as a non-work project, but you could argue that I'm doing work when I'm doing that. So I find it really hard to answer how do I set boundaries, because really I've got no idea.
Yeah, and that rings so true. Everyone I know in a creative role finds there is no work-life balance. Like there are work-life blurs that happen, but not balance in any kind of clean way. One of the things you just said there that I really loved, because it was the positivity of the language used, is it will be a great day if. Because I think so much of how people plan their day, plan their schedule, is based on guilt. You know, like, oh, I need to get this done. I've got this deadline looming over me. And if I don't get this done, I'm just going to be a wreck. where it's, you've totally flipped that around and said, no, 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 of course you have it due, but if you do that, that's incredible. Like, it, I don't know, there was something about that that is really lovely.
Yeah, it's funny. It reminds me, I recently had Toria Pitt on the show, and yeah, which is an episode I'm releasing in a couple of days, actually. And we were talking about self-talk on the interview, and she said something. I'd also heard this from Dan Pink as well. And it just reminded me, in terms of what you say about most people, like, think about, you know, scheduling things out of guilt, and the self-talk is, I have to do that. Or even with something like exercise, I have to exercise, or I have to go to the gym, or maybe not the gym because you'll probably die of COVID, but, you know, have to do home gym workout. And rather than saying I have to, just simply changing that to I get to exercise, I get to interview such and such for my podcast, I get to finish writing this article, and it completely changes your mindset. And I just think it's such a cool hack. And for me, it was really brought to life because I do use it. I try to work out 5 mornings a week in my home gym. And there are some mornings where I'm like, oh, I really can't be bothered. But I remembered this tip and I'm like, I get to exercise. And it sort of, you know, mildly changed things for me. But then I got an injury and I was kind of not at full capacity for a couple of weeks. And, you know, the physio felt like my home away from home. And then once I was injury free, it really sunk in. It's like, oh, I get to exercise. My neck is better. So I think that can be a useful way to flip things and get rid of that guilt.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's funny. I never thought I would miss swimming pools as much as I am right now in Melbourne. I just cannot wait to take my daughter to swimming lessons again. It's going to be the greatest day in the world. One other thing I've heard from people in your field of expertise, a common issue is that people always underestimate the time it takes them to do tasks. And that's why they end up feeling so guilty that, I only got through this much today. When if they actually took the time to record how long it takes to do a task, they'd see very quickly that they've actually been pretty productive that day.
Yes, it is common, the whole planning fallacy. And I think the more, now remember, I heard this tip from Cal Newport, who I mentioned earlier, and he says the more we get into the habit of time boxing, so actually essentially scheduling meetings with ourselves to do the work and particularly the deep work that we need to do, the better we get at estimating how long something will take us. So certainly with practice, you get better at it. But then Darren Murph, who I also mentioned before, talked about his philosophy around not being 100% scheduled. Because if you're 100% scheduled, nothing can go wrong. If it does, there's stress. There's no room for spontaneity. There's no room for creativity. So how Darren thinks about his diary is that he'll never be 100% scheduled. And that was definitely a recent tip that stuck with me and has really changed how I think about my diary. Because previously I would, even if it was just time boxing meetings with myself as opposed to actual meetings involving other people, I would be 100% booked in terms of how I would plan out my day. But now I always make sure that I've got an hour or two that is completely unscheduled, and it completely changes things. It makes days so much less stressful, and it means that if I do want to spend a bit more time on a task, or if something is taking longer than I'm anticipated, I'm not feeling stressed or anxious about it. I can simply just go a bit longer, and I can kind of, like moving Tetris blocks around in my diary, just kind of move things down in my electronic diary. So I find those things useful when I think about, the guilt that can come from being overscheduled.
I think if you've got I've met a couple of people in my life who have the full, you know, 7 a.m. till 9 p.m. every moment, every minute planned out. But they're people who have, like, the one I really remembered was the VC of a university that I used to work for. And they needed that because they were constantly everywhere. But they had 3 people who looked after their calendar. If you've only got one person looking after your calendar, you're right. You don't have that ability to just make changes on the fly.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, look, there is a counter argument to that, which I also think is a good one. And I remember this comes from Nir Eyal, who wrote the book Indistractable and before that wrote the book Hooked, both very popular in tech circles and outside of tech circles. And in Indistractable, he talks about the benefits of literally scheduling what you are doing from the minute you wake up to the minute you go to bed, with the theory being, how can you be distracted from something if you weren't consciously doing something in the first place? And I kind of think the opposite argument is really interesting to make as well, and just being really conscious and deliberate as to how you are spending your time. So I can see it both ways. Personally, I'm more of the not being scheduled out 100% of the time. I'm finding that really works for me.
Mm. And so you said that people can actually book you to book your company to come and walk their teams through some of these improvements and goals.
Yeah, exactly. So we've got a couple of programs. We've got a program for individuals and groups of individuals working within organizations. And we've had, I think, like several thousand people go through it now, where we put them through a 5-week course. It's all delivered virtually, of course. And we get huge improvements in productivity. So we typically get sort of a 20 to 25% improvement in productivity over a 5-week period. But what's really interesting, I reckon, is that we also measure things like job satisfaction and engagement and just how good people are feeling. And we typically get improvements of between sort of 25 to 30% improvement in how satisfied people are with their job. But the thing is, we're not changing anything about their job. We're simply changing how they approach tasks day to day. And simply through changing the way you work, you can have a huge impact on how much enjoyment you get from your work. And I think that was a really surprising finding for me. And it's something that we've replicated time and time again. But I just think it's really worth really rethinking how you approach your work, particularly during the work from home era, where often we just kind of fall into patterns, and sometimes they're good and sometimes they're, not that good.
That makes total sense. I mean, no one wants to be bored at their job, but no one wants to feel constantly overwhelmed either. And I feel that so many of the people I've known over my career have kind of oscillated between those two ends of the spectrum, and it's just not a healthy way to be.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. 100%. 100%. Yeah,
well, thank you so much for your time. And where can people find your work?
Well, they can search for How I Work wherever they listen to podcasts. They can also search for How to Date if you are single and looking for advice on that front. And in terms of the work that I do, you can simply search for Inventium, which is invent with an IUM on the end. And you can even type in .com.au and you will find my company's site.
My thanks again to Amantha. And like I said, if you would like to hear some of my tips and techniques, and it's mainly software hacks and things like that, about how I get through my day, then tune into How I Work next week, I believe, or maybe the week after, who knows. Anyway, thank you again to Amantha. Thank you to Lauren Watson for the artwork. Thank you to James Smith for all of his help when it comes to spiritual guidance. And thank you to the good people out in podcast listener land. If you feel so inclined, it would really help me if you throw a couple of 5 stars my way on the iTunes. If you hate the show, don't rate me. But if you love it, then go on over and throw me a couple of stars on Apple Podcasts. I love you. I'll speak to you next week. Bye.
Do you ever feel like your brain is on overdrive and your mind is constantly racing? The plans, worries, and to-do lists are never ending. Calm can help your mind take a break from the noise by softening anxiety symptoms in the moment and helping you cope with day-to-day stressors. Calm is the number one app for sleep and meditation, giving you the power to calm your mind and change your life. Their meditations range to fit your needs each day, from anxiety and stress, relaxation and focus, to building habits and taking care of your physical well-being. They even have expert-led talks on topics such as tips for overcoming stress and anxiety, handling grief, improving self-esteem, caring for relationships, and more. For listeners of the show, Calm is offering an exclusive offer of 40% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/stressless. Go to calm.com/stressless for 40% off unlimited access to Calm's entire library. That's calm.com/stressless.